Up, Up, and Away, Episode 24, The Super Key to Fort Superman. Hello and welcome to Up, Up, and Away, the podcast dedicated to anything and everything Superman. I am your host, Mari Benessi. How you guys doing? The date of recording this episode is July 6th, 2016. It is about 1:20 in the morning. I have a very busy schedule coming up the next 2 weeks, so I am going to be recording this week's episode today and next week's episode tomorrow, just because I have a lot of stuff going on. I'm going to be going to visit my grandparents over in Pennsylvania for a week, and I won't have a chance to really record. I'll have a chance to edit, I just won't have a chance to sit down and record for an hour, hour and a half, and just talk Superman. So I figured I'd just get it all done within the same week. Saved me a little bit of time, and it's always nice to have something in the barrel for, well, when you need to upload a podcast. And I might start doing this a little bit more frequently. It just depends on how this turns out. And, of course, with life, a lot of things are unpredictable, so this might be a really good option for me. But there is one downside to that. I cannot really keep everything current on the news that happens to come out. There was a really unfortunate piece of news that happened to have come out within this week that, had I recorded this episode last week, I would not have been able to talk about. And that is the unfortunate passing of Noelle Neal. Yeah, that one just kind of came out of nowhere. She passed away on July 3rd, and I was taking a nap. It was the 4th of July, and I woke up to the news that Noelle Neal had passed away, and it was absolutely devastating. Of course, Noelle Neal is the first actress to portray Lois Lane on the screen. She starred alongside Kirk Allen in the 1948 Superman serial, and again in Adam Man vs. Superman, and then she came back for season 2 and stayed until season 6. Of The Adventures of Superman. She was my favorite Lois Lane. You know, it really sucks that it has to come to her passing for me to realize how big of an influence to the character she had on me personally, if that makes any sense. Like, she really defined that character for me. And while all the actresses, all the talented women who have portrayed Lois Lane, from Dana Delaney to Margot Kidder to Amy Adams, Noelle Neal really solidified who this character was to me. And it's a shame that she passed away. Words cannot really describe the sadness that I feel about her passing. Her biographer and one of her very close friends, Larry Ward, wrote a really touching piece on Facebook regarding her passing. So if it's all right with you guys, I'd like to read it, because he puts into words a lot of things that I can't fully articulate. It is with great sadness that I report the passing of my very close friend, actress Noelle Neal, the original live-action Lois Lane from Superman. Noelle passed away yesterday at her home in Tucson, Arizona, after a long illness. She was 95. Noelle Darlene Neal was born in Minneapolis, Minnesota in 1920, the daughter of Minneapolis Star Tribune news editor David Neal and New York vaudeville performer Laverne Neal. She hit the stage early in life in local productions at the age of 5 and also offered dramatic radio performances on local Minneapolis stations as early as 1929. She was childhood friends with the Andrews sisters as they attended dance school together, with Noelle eventually branching out as a solo singer and dancer. Noelle and the Andrews sisters barnstormed Middle America together, playing many of the RKO Orpheum theaters throughout the region, as well as performing at countless county and state fairs throughout the Midwest in the 1930s. After graduating from Central High in Minneapolis in 1938, Noelle and her mother headed west by automobile, reaching Los Angeles a week later, where she would eventually make her permanent home. Soon after her arrival, at almost 18 years of age, she was hired to sing with Bing Crosby's band at the Del Mar Racetrack. Other singing jobs followed in San Francisco, Tucson, and in Los Angeles. And then Hollywood came calling. With the help of Crosby, Noelle signed a 7-year contract with Paramount Pictures in 1941. She initially made several short films, then appeared in mostly non-speaking roles, gradually gaining leading lady status, beginning in 1944's Are These Our Parents? In total, Noelle made close to 100 films in her long and incredible career, and surprisingly, most were Western films made in the 1940s and 1950s. She worked with many noted directors such as Cecil B. DeMille, Vincent Minnelli, and Hal Roach, and starred with actors Bob Hope, Crosby, Gene Kelly, Clayton Moore, John Mack Brown, and William Holden. But it was her role as Lois Lane in the 1948 Columbia movie serial Superman that caught the interest of fans everywhere. She was bright, funny, assertive, but with a quick sense of humor, and opposite film's first Superman, Kirk Allen, the serial was a hit which necessitated a sequel, 1950's Atom Man vs. Superman, again starring Allen with Tommy Bond as Jimmy Olsen. Her work in the iconic 1950s television series The Adventures of Superman with the late George Reeves, however, best defined and cemented her legacy as the intrepid reporter. After years of playing bit parts in bad films and great roles in forgotten films, she finally found her niche. As a teenager, she knew all about the newspaper business from her father, and she had also actually written for Women's Wear Daily in the late 1930s, so it was a role she believed she was born to play. And as she would admit in interviews later in life, she simply played herself. Arguably the most prolific actor in the Superman science fiction genre, Noelle would also go on to work with Christopher Reeve in the 1978 film Superman, in the 1980s in the Superboy series with Gerard Christopher, the 2004 Jerry Seinfeld webisode Hindsight is 2020, and finally in Brandon Routh's 2006 feature film Superman Returns. The recipient of many awards over the years, she had long professed that her 2004 Golden Boot Award for her many Western films, as presented to her by her friend and fellow actor Tom Selleck, was likely her favorite. The town of Metropolis, Illinois, which had proclaimed Noelle Neal First Lady of Metropolis some years ago, also dedicated a Lois Lane statue in her likeness in 2011 for her love of the role and her many visits to Metropolis over the years. The statue is a popular attraction and has been visited by thousands of her admirers since its dedication. As Noelle's close friend and companion and biographer, I found Noelle to be generous with her time and the same person off the screen as she appeared to be on the screen. Her stamina was legendary as she happily made personal appearances and attended book signings well into her 90th year. She was kind, selfless, hardworking, funny with a quick wit, and assertive, all the same qualities that embodied the character of Lois Lane. Noelle truly was Lois Lane, and for many of us, she was the first working woman seen on television. Few of her fans actually knew her real name, almost always simply calling her Lois, to which she would unfailing answer with a bright smile and a kind word. It was more than a role to her. Lois was someone she believed in and a character she happily and warmly embraced. Noelle Neal maintained that bright, perky, and engaging personality up until her death. Funeral services will be private with a public memorial held later this year. That was posted on July 4th, 2016. I don't know what to say, honestly. And it's really heartbreaking to lose somebody so important to the Superman fan community. We experienced it last year with the loss of Jack Larson, who played Jimmy Olsen. But from what I've heard from a lot of other superfans, Noelle Neal considered all of the Superman fans to be her children. She was essentially our mom. And it sounds silly to an outsider, but, you know, these kind of things do make a difference to us. The taking of these characters so seriously and bringing life and depth and personality to them makes all the difference in the world. And it's made a lasting impression in not only my life, but countless other people's lives, people who have gone on to play Lois Lane, people who have gone on to write for Superman, for Lois Lane as a character. Noelle Neal was truly Lois Lane, and it's terrible to hear of her passing. I'm going to take a quick break, then we'll be back with other goings-ons.
My name is Bob Fisher, and I host a podcast called Superman Forever Radio. In every episode, I'll take an aspect of this character's long history and talk about it, from 1938 to the present day. From the comics, TV shows, movies, cartoons, Superman has been part of my life for over 50 years. And if you'd like to know why, join me for each and every episode of Superman Forever Radio. So point your favorite podcatcher to Superman Forever Radio. That's Superman Forever Radio, supermanforever.com.
Thank you.
Okay, we're back. Sorry about that. Noah O'Neill's performance as Lois Lane just, you know, really stuck with me growing up as a kid, really watching the Adventures of Superman show. I watched that, I think, more than the Christopher Reeve films, just because there was just so much more to experience. You know, 5 seasons of Noelle Neal's Lois Lane, as opposed to 4 movies with Margot Kidder, and her appearance is kind of just diminishing with each film. You know, so I grew a really big attachment to the actress, even though I never knew her personally. So it does hit me a bit hard. In other news, I had a great time at Miami Supercon. I got to meet Henry Winkler, which was pretty cool. They say you should never meet your heroes, but I did. And, I mean, that was $60 later, but it was something that meant a lot to me. So, it was worth it. He was supposed to start doing his signings at about 11 a.m., and my buddy and I had gotten there at 10:30-ish, 10:15. So, as soon as I saw where his booth was, I got in line immediately. I was like the third person in line, because I was not going to miss the opportunity to meet my hero. Before that, though, I went and I got a print signed by Mr. Jose Luis Garcia Lopez, praise be his name. You've probably seen the image before. It's with Superman, and he's got Lois in his arms, and they're flying, and it's a beautiful picture. But I got that signed, and I just got a frame for it, and it's hanging on my wall, and it looks absolutely stunning. Did a little bit of walking around, got some comics, filled in some gaps in my collection, mostly for the Adventures of Superman and Action Comics titles. And then I met Kevin J. Anderson, who wrote, he wrote a lot of Star Wars novels, which I did read a lot of those. A couple of them are actually some of my favorite Star Wars books, actually. He wrote the Last Days of Krypton, and so I got him to sign my copy of that. He signed it for free, and interestingly enough, he asked me what my name was so he could, you know, personalize it, and so he put "To Mario, Up, Up, and Away." So I thought that was kind of cool. I mean, I didn't tell him that I ran a podcast with that same title. You know, that was a cool little coincidence right there. So I got that signed, and then I got to meet Mr. Elliot S. Magan, and he signed my copies of The Last Son of Krypton and Miracle Monday. And we actually had a pretty nice discussion about the books, which was pretty cool. Real nice guy. Who else did I meet? I met John Schnepp, the director of The Death of Superman Lives, What Happened? And we had a pretty cool conversation about Batman v Superman and, you know, just movies in general, which was pretty awesome. Really cool guy. And he signed my copy of his film, which was really cool. And I've been meaning to pick it up for a while. So, you know, that was a win-win for me. You know, I got it signed and I got my own copy of it. It's a DVD Blu-ray combo pack, so that works out for me. A really good documentary. Very in-depth, answered a lot of questions. And it's been a documentary that I'd been meaning to pick up for quite a while. Since it was announced, actually, but I had never gotten around to purchasing it, and I figured that, well, it was right in front of me, so I might as well pick it up since I had the money and the time. Definitely worth it. I'd like to actually talk about it a little bit more in depth in a future episode, so expect that pretty soon. I did get that Darwin Cook Supergirl figure, and I absolutely adore it. It is wonderfully sculpted. It is just a fitting tribute to the art of Mr. Darwin Cook. And those super pets, Crypto and Streaky, they are so adorable. The face on Crypto is just so cute. So that was definitely a highlight for me. I picked up a couple of trade paperbacks, or hardbacks, actually, a couple of them. They had them half off, like they usually do at conventions. So I finally picked up Volumes 2 and 3 of Superman Earth 1. I had read Volume 2, but I hadn't gotten around to reading Volume 3. So now I have those in my collection. And then I finally picked up a physical copy of Superman for All Seasons, which is kind of baffling how one of my favorite stories is not in my collection, or was not in my collection until this past Saturday. I mean, I had it digitally, but now I have a physical copy of it. It's a new printing, too, which is great. And then I got the first volume of the Jeff Loeb, Joe Kelly Supergirl run, which is pretty cool, because that's been a book that I've been looking at in the bookstore and my local comic shop since it was released, and I got it pretty cheap. I think that's pretty much it on all I bought. I mean, I did buy a Blu-ray copy of Man of Steel, but that's... I mean, I got that for $5, so not a bad steal. That's pretty much all. I mean, it was a convention that went from 10 in the morning to 8 at night, so definitely a lot of things for me to do. And I got to meet a lot of cool comic creators, which was really awesome. But other than that, you know, it was a very big day for me. I came home and I was dead tired. I usually stay up pretty late. I'm a night owl. And yeah, I know it's not good for me, but, you know, I stay up late. I get my best work done when I'm up late at night. But I came home and it was like 11:20 at night and I just passed out. I didn't wake up until noon the next day. So, you know, it was a pretty big day for Mario. So let's jump into the meat of this episode and talk about Action Comics number 241. It is cover dated June 1958, executive editor Whitney Ellsworth, cover artist by Kurt Swan and Stan Kay, and written by Jerry Coleman, penciled by Wayne Boring, inks by Stan Kay, and edited by Mort Weisinger. And the story, if you haven't seen the title of this episode, is The Super Key to Fort Superman. And I'm reading this out of the Secrets of the Fortress of Solitude. Just has a bunch of stories about Superman and the Fortress of Solitude, covering stuff as far back as Superman number 17, which is the first appearance of the Fortress of Solitude, all the way up to about the point where his Fortress of Solitude was like a sphere thing and he moved it to a jungle. So, pretty expansive history on the Fortress of Solitude. Really interesting, and definitely worth a purchase if you can find it. Okay, so we start out the story with Clark, Lois, and Jimmy just walking around the streets of Metropolis, and Lois is looking at a window, and she's kind of window shopping, and she sees a pearl necklace that she'd really like to buy, but she can't afford it. And Jimmy spots a really nice sports car that he wants to buy. They both comment about how one day they'll eventually get it. So later that day, Clark changes into Superman and dives to the bottom of the ocean, and he looks for some pearls from oysters with his X-ray vision. And he collects a couple of those and a piece of steel before flying off to the Arctic, where he spots the giant key to the Fortress of Solitude. Now, this is a very, very large key, and it weighs tons. Nobody else on Earth can lift this thing. So he takes it, and he opens the Fortress of Solitude, and he kind of just gives us a brief little tour going through all the different rooms, and he's got wax figures of Lois and Jimmy and Batman and one of Clark. He reveals that he's been making the pearl necklace for Lois, and he's been making a handmade sports car for Jimmy, and he's even making a robot detective for Batman. So these are all gifts that they would inherit upon his passing. And the reason why he's got a Clark Kent figure in there is to throw off any people who might try to put together that he is Superman, or Clark Kent, as it were. And then after that, he decides to paint, and he uses his telescopic vision, and he looks out to a Martian landscape, and he just paints that, which is pretty cool. Afterwards, he puts on a lead suit, and he starts experimenting with some kryptonite to see if he can overcome the dangerous effects of the radiation. So he's kind of just hanging out for the day, just relaxing and doing his thing. So he leaves the Fortress of Solitude, and the next day, Superman responds to an urgent call from a famous scientist, Professor Welkins. And he tells Superman that he's got a piece of metal that's pretty much indestructible, but he wants him to take it to an isolated place because he's afraid that the reverberations would shatter buildings if he hit it with all of his strength. So Superman's like, yeah, alright, I'll just wait till the end of the day and I'll take it to my Fortress of Solitude. Superman returns to the Fortress of Solitude, and he sees a message on the wall, and it says, "Prepare for the greatest puzzle of your career, Superman. I can enter and leave at will. Who am I? How can I do it? I dare you to find out." And Superman is astonished. Nobody should be able to get into this fortress. The key weighs tons of pounds. How is this possible? Nobody else on Earth is as strong as he is. Now, I know that this is before Supergirl comes in. Supergirl doesn't come in until Action Comics number 252, so at this point, he really is the strongest person on Earth. And he starts going through his fortress, thinking that maybe there will be clues in the artifacts that he has. So he passes by his trophies, and he thinks for a second that maybe one of the creatures from his interplanetary zoo has some sort of super intelligence or superpowers, and that maybe one of them might be behind it. He starts to question one of Luther's machines that was designed to bring beings from the fourth dimension, and he wonders if maybe some underground vibrations started it and made it work. He thinks to himself that he has a lot of theories but no evidence, and he just decides to continue with his plans and test out that metal. And that metal is, well, he manages to shatter it, because he's Superman. So he writes in his journal, and that is in Kryptonese, so nobody else can read it but him. It's kind of interesting to note that he engraves all of his entries with his fingernails, and that doesn't sound very comfortable there, Superman, but more power to you. So he leaves the fortress, and before he completely flies away, he melts the hole where the key would go with his X-ray vision. Now, this is back before he really had his heat vision, so it was mostly his X-ray vision, the heat that came off from his X-ray vision, that really did the trick, and they would eventually become two powers, which is pretty interesting. The next day, Superman's fighting a fire, and then, you know, nothing really going on here, and then he flies back to the Fortress of Solitude after the day is done, and he thinks to himself there's only one way to get in now, and he just smashes through the side of the mountain. He's looking to see if there are any signs of an intruder, but he doesn't see any evidence, except that the painting that he had started the couple days before is finished, but it looks nothing like the Martian landscape that he was looking at. So he decides to try and take his mind off of it by playing a game of chess with a super robot that, well, he's really intelligent. And after a lightning round of chess, Superman beats it. And then he tries to experiment with his X-ray vision and seeing if he could use some sort of technology to be able to see through lead. And as he turns up the full force of his X-ray vision, he sees a message that was brought out by the heat. And it says, "I told you I couldn't be kept out. You like puzzles. Can you guess who I am? I know who you are, and I'll reveal my knowledge in 24 hours. So Superman walks by the interplanetary zoo, and he's still having some suspicions about these creatures. He thinks that maybe he could return them to their home planets, but if one of them really does know his secrets, they could return. And later that night, he falls asleep, but he's just haunted by potential of what could be. He's having a hard time sleeping. And the next day, he rescues a disabled ship, and he's a little bit distracted. He's got a lot on his mind. You know, somebody's about to potentially jeopardize his entire existence, and he can't figure out who is doing this. So he returns back to the Fortress of Solitude, again crashing through the mountain to enter, when he sees a sign on the Clark Kent figure. It says, "Kent is Superman. I told you I knew. Now I have proved it. Tonight is your last chance to act." Superman's walking through the Fortress of Solitude when he comes across the Batman statue, and he sees a puddle of gray and blue wax on the floor. And meanwhile, a figure in the shadows is kind of laughing to himself that Superman hasn't guessed who he is, who this intruder is, and that when he does reveal himself, Superman's going to have the greatest shock of his life. Suddenly, the fortress starts to shake, the walls just start to crumble, and the room that both this mysterious character and Superman are in is pretty much sealed in, and there's a piece of kryptonite. Now, this character runs out of the shadows, and it's Batman, and he says, "Don't worry, Superman, I'll save you." Superman's surprised that Batman's the intruder, and Batman says, "Yeah, I'm the intruder. I'll explain everything as soon as I get this kryptonite away from you." Superman says, "It's no use, Batman. There's no way to get this out of here. We're completely sealed in this room, and no matter how far to which corner you take it, I'm still going to be weakened by it. So, you know, we might as well just accept our fate. But before I die, how did you get in here?" And Batman asks Superman if he remembers how years ago he told him that he was Bruce Wayne and invited him to the Batcave, where he told Batman that he was Clark Kent. And Superman's like, "Yeah." And then I told you about my fortress. You know, I never suspected you to be the person to be breaking into my fortress because I trusted you. Batman goes in to explain how he managed to break into the fortress. And he said that while Superman was gone, he used some tools to kind of carve out a little compartment in the tip of the Fortress of Solitude key so that whenever Superman opened the fortress with the key, he would be inside the fortress and just slip out. And he would hide behind the giant Joker penny that Superman had from an instance in which Superman and Batman took down the Joker and he used a giant penny. He hid behind it because it's made out of lead. And he gave Superman quite a few clues to the puzzle. And the last one that he gave was the melting of the Batman statue. And he thought to himself, all right, well, if Superman doesn't get it after this, I'm just going to surprise him. And Batman's just kind of regretful at this point that, you know, he made all of these decisions because now they're going to die. And Superman just starts laughing. Batman's really confused. Superman, why are you laughing? We're about to die. What's wrong with you? Superman says that, well, since you tricked me, the only fair way to get you back was for me to trick you. So Superman smashes his way out of the enclosed room, and he reveals that the kryptonite wasn't even really kryptonite, and that he knew. He caused the quote-unquote earthquake by a supersonic clap, which is really cool, and he figured it out. He figured out that Batman was the intruder by the melted wax in front of the Batman statue, yet the Batman statue was still there. And earlier he had gone to check the key and discovered the compartment on the tip of the key. And the only thing that Superman can't figure out is why Batman played this trick on him. And Batman says, well, you may not recall it, but today is the anniversary of your arrival on Earth from the planet Krypton. I wondered for a long time what to get you as a gift. What can one get for a Superman? He said he looked in all the stores, and then he finally came up with the right idea. A puzzle. And so Superman wraps his arm around his friend and says, yeah, thanks, pal. You gave me the best gift that I'll remember for the rest of my life. And Batman says, and you gave me a scare I'll remember forever. Now I want you to join me in the Batcave. And so later that evening, they're in the Batcave, and Superman is holding a giant knife, and there is an enormous cake with candles that are sculpted to have Superman and Clark Kent on them, which is really cool. And, well, they're just going to have a party there. Wasn't that a fun issue? I really like these kind of stories where you get a little bit of intrigue and the pieces are kind of there, but they all come together at the very end. Aside from the fact that we don't know that there is a compartment on the Fortress of Solitude key, almost all the pieces are there. So the reader is given the opportunity to try and figure out the mystery themselves. We even see the wax on the floor in front of the Batman statue, so it kind of gives us a bit of a clue. I really enjoy the art in this issue. Wayne Boring has a way with Superman, and I kind of see him as the buffer between Joe Shuster and Kurt Swan. And although the cover was drawn by Kurt Swan, you can still see a bit of Joe Shuster in the Superman, but also what would be more associated with Kurt Swan style Superman. The giant diary is actually a really cool thing, and it's something that we see a lot later down the line in, well, Superman mythos. We've seen him using his heat vision to etch his personal thoughts and memoirs onto giant slabs of just indestructible, well, nigh indestructible materials. It's really cool to get to be able to look into the fortress like this, because we get a look at the different rooms for his friends. We get to see his recreational activities. We get to see him experimenting with, well, sciences and all that jazz. We get to see his interplanetary zoo, which is always really cool to see. Some interesting characters. We get to see forbidden weapons of crimedom. We get to see Superman playing chess, which is awesome. And this is a large game of chess. These pieces are almost twice the size of him. The two panels where we really see him playing chess, the second one, he is incredibly small compared to one of the pieces that he's moving. And of course, it's really nice to see Batman in this issue. This is back when, you know, Batman and Superman could actually be friends and not hate each other's guts. And, you know, it looks like we're starting to get back to that kind of a relationship between the two. You know, I like seeing where they're friends. That's more my favorite relationship with the two. I like how this story takes place over the span of a couple of days. I think at least 4 days, which is really interesting to see. We have a great picture of Superman flying to the Arctic, and you see the Aurora Borealis, and you see the Fortress of Solitude Key. It's wonderfully designed, wonderfully drawn, incredible colors. And that splash page where we get the Superman logo, and we get a little blurb about what the story has in store for us. It's awesome. Incredibly cool. So I think that's all I really have to say about this issue. If you haven't read it yet, I thoroughly recommend that you do. Just a lot of fun. You're going to enjoy yourself. It's a wonderful time. This episode's Adventures of Superman episode is entitled Night of Terror. This synopsis comes from the Superman homepage, and it's written by James Lance. So, yeah, let's jump right into it. Original broadcast date, October 24th, 1952. Written by Ben Peter Freeman. Directed by Lee Sholem. And it stars George Reeves as Superman / Clark Kent, Jack Larson as Jimmy Olsen, Phyllis Coates as Lois Lane, Richard Benedict as Babyface Stevens, Frank Richards as Solly, Ann Duran as Miss King, John Kellogg as Mitch, Almira Sessions as Miss Backrack, Paul Breyer as the motel owner, Stephen Carr as Mr. Quinn, and Joel Friedkin as Oscar. All seems quiet at a lodge called the Restwell Tourist Cabins in the Blue Hills. There is a sign that reads, Vacancy, and a radio is playing dance music. A bird sings in this serene and tranquil scene. Further examination reveals an overturned lamp and a woman's body lying face down behind the reception desk. Lois Lane, ready to start her vacation, has entered the establishment. After some time without a response from anyone, the Daily Planet reporter finds the injured lady. A burly, suspicious character with a long scar near his left eye named Solly approaches her. Sensing that something is not quite right, Lois tries to leave. Solly, however, has different plans. He knocks out Lois to keep her from calling the police. He may have thought that he was doing the right thing, but his partner Mitch tells him that they are now in deep trouble, for they know that Lois works for a newspaper. A desperate Mitch has just called his boss. He and Solly are to watch over Lois and the other woman while they wait for professional assassin Babyface Stevens to arrive. Solly has locked the ladies in the lodge's second cabin. He then begins to tell Mitch about the hitman whom they are expecting. Babyface Stevens is a killer with a sense of humor. His method of murder is to empty his gun of all bullets except for one for each target. This is due to the fact that he never misses. Lois may find herself in deep peril now. Mitch is nervous about waiting for Babyface Stevens. It's become clear to him that the Restwell Tourist Lodge is about to become a hotbed of activity. He has put up the no vacancy sign while Solly moves Lois' car out of sight. It looks like nobody will be able to find Lois Lane and her companion in captivity. Mrs. King, the woman in the cabin number 2 with Lois, is crying hysterically. Her husband Frank was killed by Mitch and Solly because he had discovered that the gangsters were using the Restwell tourist cabins to sneak criminals across the Canadian border, which is 20 miles from the resort. Frank had learned of this mere hours before his death earlier tonight. Lois is reassuring Mrs. King that everything will be okay if she can sneak through the back window to the telephone booth outside. Solly is standing guard nearby, making it a challenge for Lois. The star reporter will have her work cut out for her. Lois was able to secretly enter the telephone booth to contact the police. When nobody responds, she tries to reach the Daily Planet, where Superman is in his office, changing into his guise of reporter Clark Kent. Jimmy Olsen has just entered the room to discuss going to a White Sox baseball game with Kent. However, Metropolis Police Inspector Bill Henderson has just given Clark a lead on the Ellsworth jewel robbery. He must leave to speak with Henderson about it. Shortly after Clark has left, Lois' call arrives. She tells Jimmy that she is in trouble and needs Clark or editor Perry White, who is in Boston, to help her. Unfortunately, Jimmy cannot get in touch with Clark, and Solly has caught Lois. Leaving a note with Perry's secretary, Miss Backrack, to give to Kent, Jimmy uses the chief's car to head for the Blue Hills to help Miss Lane. What he does not realize is that he is heading straight into an extremely dangerous situation. Miss Backrack has left Jimmy's message on Clark Kent's desk, but the paper flies onto the floor when she leaves and closes the office door. Perry's secretary may have unknowingly signed Lois and Jimmy's death warrants. The events of the evening had been pretty intense. Sally has tied Lois up in the cabin with Mrs. King. Clark is searching frantically for the note Jimmy had written for him, and Mrs. Backrack is having trouble remembering its contents. Unfortunately, Oscar the janitor had thrown the paper in the garbage to burn. Ashes are all that is left of the message in Kent's hand now. Superman may never find Lois and Jimmy. Miss Backrack has recalled something about Sleep Well or Deep Well being in the name of the place where Jimmy was going. This gives Clark a clue, of which he tells Mr. Quinn of the National Association of Tourist Camps. Quinn must look through the agency's records in order to help Kent. This could take some time. Meanwhile, the gangster Mitch has grown impatient and nervous. Should Babyface Stevens not arrive in 5 minutes, both he and Sally will kill Mrs. King and Lois themselves. The clock is ticking for the pair of women. Jimmy has arrived at the Restwell tourist cabins. Much to his surprise, Mitch and Sally believe him to be Babyface Stevens. He now has the key to cabin number 2 and a gun containing 2 bullets. At the same time, Mr. Quinn has given Clark 3 different lodges with the word well in the name. Letting Mrs. Backrack out of his office, Clark removes his reporter's garb to reveal the familiar red and blue costume of Superman. The Man of Steel must now use every ounce of speed at his disposal if he is to rescue his friends. Jimmy has entered the cabin in which Lois and Mrs. King are being held. He cuts the ropes that bound the women. However, Jimmy still must act fast. He and Lois are going to need a good plan if they and Mrs. King are going to escape Mitch and Sally alive. As Superman searches for Lois and Jimmy, Mitch and Sally are growing impatient with the cub reporter. At that moment, a car pulls up. The real Babyface Stevens has arrived, and he proves this to the other two gangsters by punching them. Stevens has gained a reputation in the underworld for being tough. The hitman then creates 2 situations that cause Jimmy to empty his gun. Now, the trio of criminals are closing in on Jimmy, Lois, and Mrs. King. There seems to be no way for them to get out of this peril. Babyface Stevens has 3 bullets prepared for Mrs. King, Lois, and Jimmy, but Superman swoops into the cabin before they can be used. Shots are fired into the air as the Man of Steel forces Babyface's arms upwards. The 3 bad guys attack Superman. However, like Babyface's knife, the thug's punches do not even scratch the caped hero. Sally, Mitch, and Babyface have been defeated. This leaves Lois to ask how Superman had known that she, Jimmy, and Mrs. King were in trouble. "A little bird told me," the last son of Krypton answers. "Betcha that little bird's name was Clark Kent," says Jimmy. "Could be," Superman replies with a laugh. What an episode. Not only is this filled with suspense and drama and mystery and intrigue, but that finale, wow. This is probably the most bombastic finale that we've seen in the series so far, and it is absolutely amazing. We really get to see Superman do his thing. I mean, there are some bits where, and I might be mistaken, but you can see the stunt double for George Reeves. I might be mistaken on that. Just the hair looks a little different, but it doesn't matter because it's so believable to me. That's Superman. He's doing his thing. I have to give the writer of this episode so much respect because it's really hard to really do a good, intimidating set of gangsters without having them come off as stupid or silly or just a bunch of buffoons. And these guys are actually menacing. Babyface Stevens. Wow, that guy's pretty scary. And Sally, I mean, he just looks vicious. Sally, Mitch, and Babyface Stevens, the actors who played them, brilliant performances, and wonderful even. What can I say about George Reeves that hasn't been said before, that I haven't even said before? He is definitely the man for this series, and I thoroughly enjoy every minute that he's on screen. Really happy to see this as more of a Lois-based episode, actually. A lot of the time, we're following her. I mean, yeah, we do get to see Jimmy try to reach Inspector Henderson and Clark try and figure things out by himself. But a majority of this is Lois. The scene where she's trying to call the police and then resorts to calling the Daily Planet, so much tension, so much drama in that sequence, where she ducks and tries to avoid the sight of Solly. You really feel like there is this pressure to really get things done discreetly and quickly. And then when she's finally captured by him, it is terrifying. And we get another set of Lois screams. And Phyllis Coates is really good at screams for some reason. The one scream that I will always remember, and it's kind of etched into my brain, is the scream that she does in Superman and the Mole Men, where she's on the phone and I think she turns around and she sees a couple of the Mole Men looking at her through the window, and she just does this scream, and it's blood-curdling, and it's forever in my mind. It gave me nightmares for a while, not gonna lie. Back when I was younger, it was a terrifying scream, but she does it so well. I think this is one of the first times that we really get to see Superman changing into Clark Kent. I can't remember another time where he does this, and I'm sure George Reeves will do this somewhere else in the series, but it is really cool to see him just putting the Clark Kent suit together, and we get to see the suit beneath the suit. That's a really cool image, and I tried finding the image on like a Google image search. I couldn't find it, so I really want to make that either my background for my desktop or my Facebook cover photo or even my profile picture. Well, eventually. I'm still pretty pleased with the picture of me and Henry Winkler together, but it's a really cool image. I would highly recommend this episode. There is so much to enjoy in this, and maybe it's just because I have an affinity for gangsters. Not like, yo, 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 what up, dog gangsters. More like, it's Quaintance for you, pal. Quaintance gangsters, if that makes sense. You know, the 1930s kind of gangsters. I like that kind of stuff. Let's dive into the Essential Superman Encyclopedia. The first entry for this episode is Abu, Garn, a lawyer on the planet Lexor, which revered Lex Luthor as a hero, who, along with his partner, Vel Kenar, was appointed to defend the Superman of the pre-First Crisis Earth-1 when the Man of Steel was charged with murdering Luthor. Luthor had escaped prison on Earth and fled to Lexor, to which he was pursued by Superman. During a fight with Luthor, the Man of Steel seemed to deliver a killing blow. Superman, however, discovered and persuaded his reluctant defense attorneys that Luthor had merely taken a drug that placed him in a catatonic state so deep that it was indistinguishable from death. Its effects were to be temporary, designed so that Luthor would awaken only after Superman had been convicted and executed by Lex's swift legal system. Superman then administered the antidote to Luthor prematurely and, with Luthor alive, the Man of Steel was released from custody. Superman left Luthor on Lexor, unable to convince its citizens that Luthor had taken the drug deliberately to entrap Superman. This appears in Action Comics numbers 318 and 319, cover dated November and December of 1964. The Ace. The leader of a gang of smugglers on the pre-First Crisis Earth-1 who were captured thanks to an elaborate ruse in which Superman pretended to have murdered Clark Kent. The smugglers knew that Kent had learned the date and time of their next secret meeting, but did not change it after being duped into believing Kent dead. This appears in Superman, Volume 1, Number 62, cover dated January-February, 1950. The Ace of Clubs Bar, a blue-collar bar in the Suicide Slum District of Metropolis, owned and operated by former prize fighter Bibbo Babowski, who bought the watering hole he frequented with the proceeds from a winning lottery ticket that appeared in The Adventures of Superman, number 428, May 1987. The ticket originally belonged to his friend Jose Delgado, who lost it. Ultimately, the ticket was found by Bibbo, Superman, Volume 2, number 51, January 1991, and the prize money allowed him to buy the bar. Action Comics, number 661, January 1991. And for the super fact, Lois Lane's phone number is 101-555-0820. Don't try and call it, folks. It's not going to work. The 555, that's kind of a key indicator that it's not going to work for you. And this episode's super quote comes from Mr. Grant Morrison, the man behind the wonderful all-star Superman and the first 18 issues of the New 52 Action Comics, among so many other things. He has a brilliant understanding of the character and, well, an amazing love for the Silver Age. The thing that's been exciting about Superman is to see how the character has developed throughout the generations. Good night, folks.
Tarzan wasn't a ladies' man. He'd just come along and scoop him up under his arm like that. Quick as a cat in the jungle. But Clark Kent, now there was a real gent. He would not be caught sitting around in no jungle scheme. Dumb as an ape doing nothing. Superman never made any money, saving the world from Solomon Grundy. Sometimes I despair the world will never see another man like him. Hey Bob, Sue had a straight job, even though he could have smashed through any bank in the United States. He had the strength, but he would not. Folks said his family were all dead. The planet crumbled, but Superman, he forced himself to carry on. Forget Krypton and keep going. Superman never made any money. Saving the world from Solomon Grundy. And sometimes I despair the world will never see another man like him. Tarzan was king of the jungle and lord over all the hardly a string together for words. I toss in Eugene. Sometimes when Soup was stopping crimes, I'll bet that he was tempted to just quit and turn his back on man. Join Tarzan in the forest. But he stayed in the city, kept on changing clothes and dirty old phone booths till his work was through. And nothing to do. Superman never made any money, saving the world from Solomon Grundy. And sometimes I despair the world will never see another man like him. And sometimes I despair the world will never see another man.
For more Up Up and Away, visit upupandaway.podomatic.com. You can find us on Facebook by searching Up Up and Away Podcast, and Mario can be contacted through Twitter at MarioFanOfSteel and can be emailed at mbenesse94@yahoo.com. That's B as in boy, E-N-N-E-S-E. Up, Up, and Away is a proud member of the Superman Podcast Network. Superman and all related properties are copyright DC Comics and Warner Brothers Entertainment. All images and music are property of their respective owners, and no infringement is intended. This is a non-profit fan podcast. Superman was created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster.